Good morning, everyone. A monk asked Tengshan, "When cold and heat come, how shall we avoid them?" Shan said, "Why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "What is that place where there is no cold or heat?" Tengshan said, "When it is cold, the cold kills you. When it is hot, the heat kills you." So here we are on the 25th of May. The temperature is in the 40s. A cold rain has been falling for days, and there may even be snow in the mountains tonight. Everyone's mood is souring. After all, this is Memorial Day weekend. We should be barbecuing, watching parades, opening our camps, and enjoying the spring blossoms, not huddling by the wood stove. We grumble to one another that this is unnatural, another dreadful consequence of global climate change. Still, those of us who live here in northern New England believe, as our Calvinist predecessors did, that life must be a struggle where weather-borne plagues are the cauldron in which we can redeem our indolent natures. However, we also believe that we make that penance in full between November and April. By May, our souls deserve a temporary respite in this perpetual battle with our baser nature. After all, fair is fair, and enough is enough. Time to get the basted ribs on the grill. Of course, as Buddhists, while we don't subscribe to the Calvinist notion of suffering as the path to redemption, our own Shakyamuni Buddha wasn't any more optimistic than Calvin. Had he lived here in Maine, he would have recognized that our weather as simply a confirmation of his first noble truth, dukkha, or suffering. The root of dukkha is impermanence, and what is more impermanent than New England weather? Of course, impermanence is only half of the equation of suffering. The other half is our attachment and delusion. In this case, our attachment to the notion that the weather should be warm and sunny on Memorial Day weekend. We constantly resist the reality of impermanence. However, unlike Calvin, who saw suffering as a path of purification and ultimately redemption in another life, the Buddha's teaching and the three other noble truths reveal the cause of suffering and ultimately the path to liberation from suffering in this very life. Following the Buddha's teachings can bring us to seeing that this very land is the lotus land. And so this brings us to the koan. A monk asked Tengshan, "When cold and heat come, how shall we avoid them?" Shan said, "Why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "What is the place where there is no cold or heat?" Tengshan said, "When it is cold, the cold kills you. When it is hot, the heat kills you." It seems possible to me that in this...
I'm missing the last word on each of those. When the cold is...
When it's cold, the cold kills you.
Okay.
When it's hot, the heat kills you. It seems possible to me that in this case the monk isn't inquiring about cold and hot weather, but the rise and fall of powerful emotional states. However, that doesn't matter. Whether we are tossed about by the vicissitudes of externals such as weather or by the tempests of our interior landscape, the principles of attachment and our finding freedom from attachment remain the same. So what is the place of freedom where there is no cold or heat, no attachment, no suffering? Where is the place that Tengshan is referring to? Where does the Buddha's path to liberation, which he refers to in the Four Noble Truths, bring us to? You may be tempted to say that it is the Absolute. After all, in the Absolute there is no thing, no heat, no cold, no you, no suffering at all. It is the first place of perfect equanimity. Or perhaps the Buddha was referring to the Carolinas, where many New Englanders seek refuge from the winter's dukkha. However, Tangshan is not referring to Winston-Salem or to the Absolute. He makes that clear in response to the monk's second question. When it is cold, the cold kills you. When it is hot, the heat kills you. He is not talking about the Absolute where cold, heat, and you don't exist. We can't live in that place, although there are those moments when we glimpse that emptiness. He is talking about the place where our resistance evaporates and we can really be hot or cold. We can experience the boundless nature of hot and cold. When we are cold, we just shiver. When we are hot, we just sweat. He is talking about right here in this very moment, where being fully present, we cease to exist apart and separate from this great reality. Of course, here in New England, impermanence can also work to our advantage. While this weekend is cold and wet, by the end of next week it will be sunny and 80. Whatever the nature of our present experience, it is sure to change. All discomfort will pass just as surely as these rain clouds will eventually blow away. Or we might hope that they will eventually blow away. Conversely, if our life is going well today, difficulty and challenges are sure to return. Non-attachment means that we cannot hold on to anything in this life. This week, the apple blossoms were magnificent, but in last night's storm-driven winds, they fell to the ground like snowflakes. Like everything in this universe, they only manifest for a brief interval. Even the great mountains are eventually ground into dust. So our lives are just thus. When it's cold and rainy, we fire up the wood stove. When it's warm and sunny, we fire up the grill. I know that doesn't sound very sexy, but the truth is that if we diligently practice the Buddha's way, our life will be entirely transformed in a way that is extraordinary and yet simultaneously perfectly ordinary. The path to nirvana is not found in the exotic lands of the Far East. It winds its way through our mundane lives down east. Even here in Maine, we are living in nirvana. We only need to practice diligently to realize it. A monk asked Tangshan, "When cold and heat come, how shall we avoid them?" Shan said, "Why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "What is the place where there is no cold or heat?" Tangshan said, "When it is cold, the cold kills you. When it is hot, the heat kills you."
So, I felt cheated this morning because I got passed on my koan very quickly and did not get to pontificate and prove how wise I am and hear myself blow hot air. So I'm going to take the opportunity now. And my koan this week was about something getting broken. And so that's what I was reflecting on a lot this week in my sitting, was brokenness. And the fact that, you know, that's how we habitually look at the world. We think we're broken. We think, you know, the ozone layer is broken and, you know, our jobs are broken, our finances are broken, our relationships are broken, you know, we're just habitually looking and seeing brokenness everywhere we look. And the person's teacher in my koan, I think, challenged him to bring forth the wholeness in that brokenness. You know, where is that? What is that? What does that look like? what does it mean to fully and perfectly inhabit our own brokenness, our own suffering, our own dukkha, our own bullshit? I'm not sure right now.
I think what brings me to practice is wanting to not be lost in illusion. And, you know, I mean, what you were saying on the thrust of this koan is, in some ways, the answer is not trying not to be deluded. You know, we're functioning in that. It's, you know, the last line of my koan was, "You two are a man in the weeds." Yeah. We're all navigating them.
And if we try to cut them down, they just grow right back up.
Is there a reason that we look through the lens of brokenness at things rather than the lens of wholeness?
I don't know.
I think it's 21st century Greek.
I
don't know. The Buddha was.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I think it's the same. I think there's a richer picture of you know, a brokenness around nowadays. But I don't know. You just do it. But I think it's the same shit. It's the same thing. You know, I think everybody, you know, that whole skin bag thing and that whole, you know, breaking in, breaking out, and you know, be enlightened, don't be enlightened, whatever, you know, it's a whole broken, you know, it's that whole duality thing. You know, it's just, I think if it's always coming from an idea of wholeness, you know, we tend to sound like the new agey folks that, you know, just, you know, be here now, get Zen, you know, which isn't wrong, but it's pretty shallow. But the broken doesn't work either.
But we're more familiar with it. So so we keep...
We're normally neurotic, therefore it's a good place to start from.
It's the only place to start from. Where else are you going to start from? Right? If you can't start from your own neurosis, then you're screwed, because there's nowhere else to start from. There's that great line in that Leonard Cohen song, Anthem, where he says, you know, there's a crack in everything, that's how the light gets in.
Yeah,
that's
right?
Right?
That's a different song, maybe. Isn't it?
I think it's Anthem.
Yeah, it is Anthem. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's got to be true for us, you know? I mean, the human condition is that everything's imperfect, but it's perfectly imperfect. You know, there's nowhere else to wake up.
Both realities interpenetrate. You know, this is perfect. Governor Page is an asshole. They're both true, right? I mean, you know that simultaneous. You know, I'm a perfect being. I'm a fuck up. You know, both true all the time.
The alternative is to try to pretend that it's not so. You know, I'm not broken. You know, I've got my shit together. Well, where does that get you? You know?
There's a famous incident at a social services meeting where someone was doing a presentation on some new agey thing they were doing for the assembled social services people. And what, and the possibility of volunteering for that. And one of them said, well, by the way, you know, there's, when you go into the homes of dying people, there's going to be, you know, a lot of people smoke, and there's just cigarette smoke all over the place. And the response from this person is, well, no, I live a very pure life. It's a famous sort of new agey sort of thing, you know, that somehow there's a...
It's separate.
Separate, very pure life. Pure what? You know, everybody was very, very very willing in their own minds to fill in what that pure was, but it wasn't a pretty sight.
I think we go back to what Peter was saying about, you know, maybe it's literal hot and cold, maybe it's internal hot and cold, and I think, you know, a lot of times people start this kind of practice or other kinds of spiritual practices as a way to bury that, you know. I don't get angry. I don't lust. I'm not greedy. You know, we think if we can just hide all that and pretend that it doesn't exist, then we're these spiritually pure beings.
Of course. You know, I mean, I started there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's also the famous, well, person who, you know, you're playing some kind of sport with, and they say, I'm not very competitive. You know, and then you get on the racquetball court or the tennis court, and they've got this amazing amount of aggression, you know. And what it is that they're very uncomfortable with what that competition brings up in themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm not competitive.
I bet you're not.
I'm less competitive than you are.
No, I'm the least competitive.
Oh, there you go.
I have transcended competition. Yeah, you know, and that's the other thing is sort of the other dialectic that brings up is this tension between accepting what is and ourselves as we are, and the need for change. And, you know, I think most Buddhists sort of struggle with that, because we can sort of get into almost this quietism place that says, you know, all we need to do is sit here and work on ourselves, and and then there's sort of the activism pull that says, no, we got to get out in the world, we got to do things, and there's a constant tension between those two things because neither one is wrong and neither one is right, you know.
I don't think this is the whole thing. In some ways, I think the times when you just plain have to say, I will be different, I will whatever, but I think there's also the practice enables change, and the most important change is somehow not the stuff you had in, you necessarily had in mind. You know, it's just... And maybe not, you know. I mean, I'm a lousy example. Look at how long I've been doing it and what a schmuck I am. But in some ways, the stuff that it sort of opens up in your life is not what you can go out and grab. I guess that's part of it.
Yeah.